Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Changing that psychology, recognizing that actually good jobs that pay high wages, that's an output of the economy. That's one of the things we need our markets to do. Can be very powerful in helping us think about, okay, therefore, what kinds of policies do we need if we want our markets to do that?
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Orrin Cass, chief economist at American Compass and editor of the recent book, The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. We'll go in-depth with Orrin about that book later on in today's program. First, we will hear excerpts from Victor Davis Hanson's commencement address at Hillsdale College in March of 2025. Victor Davis Hanson is Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College, also a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Victor Davis Hanson gave the commencement address at the 173rd commencement ceremonies at Hillsdale, May 11th, 2025. It's titled Honor, Tradition, and Optimism. Dr. Hanson began the commencement address by noting Hillsdale's principled stand in its independence from federal influence, and he introduced the themes of his address, honor, tradition, and optimism. He began by outlining and discussing the value of honor.
You, the graduating class, have been instructed in, absorbed fully, and will pass on thus a code of honorable conduct that has become a natural, not a forced part of who you are, and it will remain with you in the long road ahead. Hillsdale has taught you not to worry if you are not one with the current majority of youth, because you are certainly one with most of the past and future generations, and your confidence in your code of ethical comportment and personal standards will help guide future cohorts and the nation itself to come. Because your values are real, they're permanent, and they are ancient, you will not be won over by others who justify their lapses of behavior by situational ethics, victimization, or the fads of the time. You see, without such individual vows of honesty and compassion for others, civilization in its aggregate cannot be sustained. It descends otherwise into the age-old banes of tribalism, disunity, and chaos. Students at Hillsdale do not steal bicycles because their personal code of honor will forbid it, because they have concern that the poor victim would suffer without his property, and because they know that if many did just that, then their own culture and civilization would crumble, as indeed it has in many places in America today. Much of our society's current crisis derives from this personal inability to respect the property of others, to tell the truth, to stand up to the bully, to protect the weaker, and to end each day in contemplation that you were more a moral force for the common good than either a neutral observer or even on the wrong side of the moral ledger. When individual behavior and decorum falter, so does a country, which is, after all, only the common reflection of millions of its individuals.
We're listening to excerpts from Victor Davis Hanson's commencement address at Hillsdale College in May of 2025. He continues by addressing the power and necessity of tradition.
The character of the Hillsdale student is nurtured and ingrained by tradition. That word is derived from the Latin noun traditio, a transmission or a handing down something from the past to the present to the future. So often in this current age of presentism, we in our narcissism and arrogance confuse our amazing technical and material success with automatic moral progress. However, we seem unaware that thinkers of the past, dating back to the poet Hesiod 2,700 years ago, worried about just the opposite. With material progress and greater wealth often comes moral regress. Given the greater opportunities to gratify the appetites with perceived fewer consequences, and to use sophistry to excuse the sin. So too, without traditional reverence for the past, an ungrateful nation suffers not just knowledge lost, but is plagued by hubris, which is so often the twin of ignorance. And thus it believes that it alone has discovered ideas and behaviors unique to themselves and their own era when they are in fact ancient. This mindset seeks heaven on earth perfection instead of the good, and thus it obtains neither. Are we not the sum total of all those who came before us, who for the most part here in America left us a system, a constitution, and an infrastructure that allowed us to start our own lives materially and safely far ahead of those elsewhere and our own generations prior? And key to this new endangered idea of reverence for the past is a necessary warning that it is neither fair nor just to dismiss those of earlier generations by the standards of the present. Instead, we must remember that those in a pre-modern society were so often captives of illness and short lives. Work so often was synonymous with physical danger and existential drudgery. And yet our predecessors were able to endure that suffering and challenges that we can now even cannot even scarcely imagine. The Hillsdale reverence, this rare reverence on this campus for the Western tradition and the American past, is a reminder not so easily to condemn and erase the dead, lest you and your time shall be judged capriciously by future generations and found wanting.
Finally, in his commencement address at Hillsdale College this year, Dr. Victor Davis Hanson talks about optimism as a civic and cultural force.
Your generation is now witness to a counter-revolution. There's a counter-revolution unfolding of sorts where millions of your Americans are asking their culture and society to re-examine their behavior and to restore the ancient decency and to look for the good of the past generations and not judge them, as I said so cavalierly. Critical to this restoration is your optimism. That is the child of gratitude for all that we have inherited and all that we wish to enhance and to pass on to others not born. With optimism and confidence of the citizenry, a civilization grows, not shrinks. It becomes secure, not depressed or self-loathing. And it looks forward to the future with reverence for the past rather than ashamed of it. It is now chic to be moody and pessimistic, but uncool to be upbeat and cheerful. But the strength of this country, even in the darkest days of April 12, 1861, or December 7, 1941, or September 11, 2001, has always been its singular ability to remain not just unshaken, but confident in its values, in its unity, and its inherent strength to overcome all challenges. In this current counter-revolution that we were witnessing, an effort admittedly divisive to so many, it is not the duty nor the desire of Hillsdale to become a political player. Nonetheless, the nation looks for guidance, answers, and reassurance of the old wisdom. And therefore, it is only natural, as I said, that the college and its moral and intellectual architecture have become preeminent in a fashion scarcely imaginable in the past. So you, the class of 2025 as Hillsdale graduates, will be asked by your peers in America to provide guidance as never before. And I am confident by your education, by your code of comportment, by your reverence for the past, and by your optimism, you will become natural leaders and exemplars in whatever path you follow. In your era to come, that will be, I think, America's greatest renaissance, but also its most decent. Thank you, and may God bless you all.
That was Dr. Victor Davis Hanson, Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution. You can view this entire commencement address at Hillsdale College's YouTube page. Up next, Orrin Cass, editor of the new book, The New Conservatives. We'll talk with him next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Smoke and sap, dirt and grime, leaves and pollen, and even bugs. Just a few things that can possibly damage your vehicle's paint over time, causing it to pit, fade, and oxidize, basically ruining your paint job. Quick and Clean Car Wash can help. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading invites you to stop by and enjoy their all-cloth car wash. Why don't take the time to pre-wash and hand-scrub your car or truck? Quick and Clean Car Wash also offers car wash packages. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Are you looking to take your business to the next level? Don't let staffing issues or HR red tape stop you from growing. The most successful businesses are those that have mastered their HR and staffing needs, and they have done it with O2 Employment Services. Finding qualified help is harder and more expensive than ever. HR regulations are getting more and more complex and confusing. For over 20 years, O2 has been providing the foundation successful businesses need to grow, assisting employers with their HR, payroll, workers' comp, benefits and staffing. Partnering with O2 gives you the expertise you need to manage your business and employees. Outsourcing your HR and staffing is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity for successful businesses, and it is more affordable than you think. Let O2 show you how we can help you reduce your HR complexities, hire the right talent, and get back to growing your business. Call O2 today at 530-223-4674 or visit us online at O2ES.com.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We welcome our listeners in Detroit, Michigan at WDTK AM 1440 and FM 92.7, The Answer. And also our listeners in Elmira, New York at WLNL AM 1000, The Bell. Thank you for tuning in to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined by Orrin Cass. He is chief economist at American Compass. You can find more at americancompass.org or also at commonplace.org. He's on X at Orrin_Cass. Orrin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Also, the editor of the brand new book, The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. And I wanted to ask two things. One is, this book is centered around the fifth anniversary of American Compass. So what's American Compass for people who don't know? And who are the new conservatives? Meaning, are they old liberals? Are they old independents? People who weren't paying attention to politics? Who are these new conservatives?
It's a good question about who the new conservatives are. But briefly about American Compass, we're a think tank that was founded, 5 years ago at the beginning of 2020. Basically in response to everything that was happening on the right of center in conservatism, you know, it was most of the way through Donald Trump's first term. He had obviously disrupted the, what I would call the old right, the sort of Reagan style Republican Party. Certainly it seemed clear to me that we were not going back to that old version and should not go back, that there were a lot of problems in the country that the old consensus was not addressing. But if you looked around at the institutions, you know, the think tanks, the publications, congressional offices, everyone pretty much had their heads down hoping that this too shall pass and we can, you know, go back to another Paul Ryan, Nikki Haley ticket. And so, you know, we created American Compass really to be a flagship for all the nascent efforts, to define something new and better and chart a course forward, beyond Trump into a conservatism that would address what I think are the very serious problems we have in this country. And so I guess that's who the new conservatives are. I think the new conservatives are almost entirely drawn from within that old existing right of center coalition. But I would say they're the segment that were genuinely conservative, you know, not as obsessed with the kind of free market libertarian economics, not as obsessed with the, you know, neoconservative desire to go out and find wars to start, but really focused on these questions of family, of community, of industry, of how do you, you know, create great environments to raise kids who are going to grow up to be productive citizens. How do you preserve a strong nation that can serve our own interests and advance what we see as human flourishing and the good life for our citizens? And so I think, you know, that has become obviously an increasingly prominent segment in the right of center. And so we wanted to bring together a lot of the best work they've been doing and sort of show how it fits together and what it would mean, for a policy agenda, but also for a vision of America.
The book, The New Conservatives, is a collection of essays broken into different sections: markets, the state, labor, capital, China, industrial policy. We'll cover as many as we can in the time we have together. But the big question it tries to answer in some ways is, where did the right of center go wrong in its thinking about markets and capitalism? And you present that question in the introduction to the book. The details of that we'll follow in our conversation, but let me begin by asking about the evidence. How do we know, or how do you know, that the right of center did go wrong in those areas?
Well, I guess there's sort of the empirical question of did America go wrong? Have we succeeded in what we wanted to accomplish, or do we have real and deepening challenges? And then if we've gone wrong, what was the contribution of right of center policy to it? I think unquestionably we have gone wrong. I think, you know, there are some measures that look very good. If what you're concerned about is GDP, if what you're concerned about is kind of material living standards, and I certainly think those things are important, we should say we've done very well on those fronts. I think we have more stuff than ever, and that goes for pretty much everybody. I mean, anywhere you look on the socioeconomic spectrum, even down to those who are most struggling, you know, they are certainly likely to have a larger house or apartment, to have more appliances, to have air conditioning, to have a bigger television, to have a car with more gadgets in it, right? And so that's not nothing, but I think if you look beyond that to other things that we care about, and that especially that conservatives have always emphasized in terms of, you know, the strength and health of our communities, the formation of families, the kinds of economic opportunities that people have to really build decent lives and achieve self-sufficiency and support themselves and their families. On those fronts, I think we've seen a very sharp erosion of well-being. And then, you know, if you think of that as kind of the micro level, then also if you go up to the macro level and look at what's happened to the national economy, I think you see a very dangerous erosion in, you know, we've seen investment steadily declining. We've seen certainly less productive deployment of that investment to actually kind of building new things. We've seen real slowdowns in productivity growth. We've seen, obviously, the hollowing out of manufacturing, the offshoring to China. And all of that is now built up also to even real slowdowns in our ability to lead on science and technology and so forth. And certainly I think it's safe to say at this point that the kind of era of American hegemony is over. We're going to have to rethink our role in the world too. And so, you know, the problem, the right of center in all of this is I think our enthusiasm for free markets, and to be clear, I love free markets too. We certainly need to have a market economy, but I think we tipped over into a sort of blind faith in markets and just an assumption that, you know, whatever markets were delivering would be good, would be the best possible outcome, and that all government needed to do was get out of the way. And I think we've seen that there are actually a lot of ways, you know, what we're seeing now, there are a lot of ways that markets can go wrong. If the most profitable thing to do is to move production to China, that's what people will do. What that means for jobs and American workers won't get considered. You know, if the highest return on investment comes from starting a hedge fund and speculating, that's what people will do. They won't go out and build new businesses at all. And, you know, in all of these different ways, I think we've just seen that. And again, I think this is exactly the way conservatives should think about it. You know, markets actually need constraints. Markets need supporting institutions. And what I think the new conservatives are really bringing back to that discussion in such an important way is focusing on those things, saying, no, we do have a responsibility, whether just as citizens, as policymakers, as statesmen, to actually think about that and figure out how we can get markets actually serving the common good.
Much more to talk about with Orrin Kass. He's the chief economist at American Compass and also editor of the new book, The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday. Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and me Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're going to discuss what's happening in our city, county, state, and nation. Join in. Miss a day, miss a lot. Free Fire Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
I'm here today with my insurance agent of about 12 years, Kevin Wall from Allstate. He's located at 2861 Churn Creek Road. Now, Kevin, what is it that has made you such a successful insurance office for, what, almost 30 years?
Yes, actually, 28 years, June 1st. And the fact that we genuinely care about our clients and want to do what's best to make sure we take care of their insurance needs.
I remember when my daughter had her accident, and Allstate and your office was right there to help with the claims process.
As I mentioned, we have great staff and customer service. We really do go the extra mile. And with Allstate, if you qualify for the California Good Driver discount, you can most likely get started with as low as 1 month down.
Now, do people have to wait until their renewal to get started?
No, absolutely not. Whether your policy is coming up for renewal now or if you're midterm, it really doesn't matter. We can usually get you covered within about 15 minutes from when you call. Whether it's auto, home, or anything else that needs insured, if you just give us a call or text us, we'd be glad to help you. 530-222-2306.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. You can find everything at podcast.hillsdale.edu. Great Hillsdale programs like Imprimis, The Larry Arnn Show, the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast, and older episodes of this show, podcast.hillsdale.edu. You also can subscribe and find those shows at your favorite place to listen to audio, including YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe for new episodes. Orrin Cass is with us. The book, The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. Orrin writes a number of essays through the book, including both in the chapter on the market. And reading those essays, Orrin, I was curious about the idea of the economic idea of creative destruction. Does it exist in the traditional understanding for the new conservatives and the way they think about the market?
Oh, absolutely. I think creative destruction is incredibly important. But I think what we have to recognize and what's maybe been missing is that it has to be one side of a coin. Creative construction has to be the other side of it. And, you know, I think the best way to think about this is to go all the way back to the example of agriculture, because what you'll hear people say sometimes is, you know, if if someone is concerned about, you know, losing all the manufacturing jobs, let's say, they'll say, oh, well, you know, we lost all the agricultural jobs. You wouldn't want everybody to go back and be working on farms. And that's absolutely true. But it's important to recognize that as we were, you know, mechanizing agriculture, as we were industrializing, it wasn't just a matter of eliminating all the farm jobs and telling everybody to just stay home and you know, we'll send you a check from the government. It was a process where as quickly as we were mechanizing agriculture, we were building a new industrial economy. We were creating new and better opportunities for people. And what I think has gone wrong in recent decades is that the creative destruction has not been accompanied by the creative construction. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of profit to be made in certainly finding ways to reduce costs and boost efficiency, but there was not nearly as much money to be made in going out there and building new businesses, finding new and more productive ways for people to do things. And so if you only get one side of it, if you get an economy that is generating profits for people through creative destruction, but not actually creating new and better opportunities as part of that process, I think you can get a situation where some of the economic data will look very good, but the actual economy as experienced by people, the opportunities for the typical worker and his family don't necessarily improve at all.
The chapter on the state talks about government involvement in markets, and that can make some conservatives really, you know, start to break out and itch. You say, if we want the market to serve well the needs of the American people, we must first recover the tools necessary to shape it. What are those tools available and, in your mind, necessary to shape the economy toward an end?
Well, let me start by saying if this discussion sort of, you know, causes you to break out in hives, it's it's worth rethinking your conservatism, because conservatism as it traditionally existed, as it certainly exists in the American tradition all the way up until the late 20th century, absolutely recognized a substantial role for government in shaping the economy. I mean, people go all the way back to, you know, Alexander Hamilton, of course, and his report on manufacturers and belief in protecting domestic industry. But it's fair to ask, you know, Hamilton wasn't necessarily a conservative, but we had the entire what was called the American system of the early 19th century. It was well understood that this new nation, as it developed, was going to need, you know, everything from obviously the debates about a national bank to intensive investment in infrastructure to tariffs to protect the domestic market and encourage the development of industry. And, you know, we did the land grant colleges. Obviously we did antitrust to address the concentration of economic power. It was always accepted that, you know, free markets and capitalism did not mean laissez-faire and libertarianism. And you see that from the other side, which is that the people who did promote this very libertarian view, you know, Friedrich Hayek is a great example. I think Friedrich Hayek was a phenomenally important economist, but he sure as heck wasn't a conservative. In fact, his most famous essay is titled, "Why I Am Not a Conservative." And so, you know, even Ronald Reagan, I mean, took aggressively protectionist measures against Japan. You know, most people don't know this. His famous line about, you know, the nine most terrifying words are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help," was actually delivered at the start of a press conference proudly announcing unprecedented assistance to the agricultural industry. And so, there was obviously always a rhetoric of skepticism about government, and I think skepticism about government is very important. But somehow only pretty recently did that tip into this sort of blind commitment to believing that government shouldn't do anything and should just get out of the way.
Talking with Orrin Cass, he's the editor of the new book, The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. How does the book, how does American Compass think about what markets are for, and also what do you think markets can't do naturally?
going all the way back to the title of the book, you know, we talk about those ideas of restoring the commitment to family, community, and industry. Markets aren't going to care at all about family, community, or industry. If it happens to be profitable, they will, but that's not what markets do. And so if we care as conservatives, as Americans, about family, community, and industry, then we are going to have to think about the kinds of constraints that we put on markets, the kinds of institutions supporting markets that make sure that those priorities do get taken care of. And so that's where, you know, you're kind of then listing all those other chapters in the book, you know, globalization and trade, mm-hmm. and how we think about, you know, actually caring about manufacturing things here is a great example of a place where obviously government has lots of tools at its disposal and needs to use them. You know, immigration policy, who do we admit to the country and allow to participate in the economy, that has huge implications. You know, one area that got lost and the new conservatives are very interested in is labor. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that worker power, that worker organizing is a good thing. We should want workers to have power. We should want them to be able to negotiate on a level playing field with employers and to advance their own interests in a way that an individual worker, you know, almost surely cannot. Mm-hmm. And again, that's something, literally that's something Adam Smith wrote about. The lone worker is at an extraordinary disadvantage. You know, John Stuart Mill, even the very libertarian, wrote about, you know, wanting to ensure that workers were able to join together and advance their own interests against employers and capital. And so, you know, all of these things, I think one thing you see very quickly in the book also is that doesn't mean like that the Democrats are right. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there are some good ideas, obviously, all over the political spectrum. But working from the set of assumptions and priorities that you see in the left of center, I think they land on a lot of very bad policies in a lot of these areas. But for conservatives, the response can't just be, well, let's not do anything. And let's also deny there's a problem at all, because if we admit there's a problem, we're going to have to do something. Mm-hmm. Let's actually sort of open our eyes and recognize what has gone wrong, what it has done to the fabric of this country, and ask from starting from conservative principles, how would you start to build responses that get us going back in the right direction?
A few more minutes with Orrin Cass coming up next. He's editor of the book The New Conservatives: Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Jack Potter, Jr., Tribal Chairman for Redding Rancheria. We've proudly partnered with the Redding Rodeo Association for Native American Appreciation Nights. As you know, our roots and hearts are here in this community and are proud of this partnership. From grants to help local businesses and government, to making health care available to so many, to our own community events like the Stillwater Powwow that happens right here on this same land, Redding Rancheria is proud to play our part.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been going in-depth in the new book, The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. Orrin Cass is the editor. He's also the founder and chief economist at American Compass. More at AmericanCompass.org. Orrin, I'm going to jump ahead a bit because you talked about labor unions. And in that section of the book, I was struck by the way you discussed the dysfunction of current labor unions, and I wondered if labor unions were working efficiently and effectively, would more conservatives like or even love the concept of labor unions?
Yeah, I think, and I like the way you said concept of labor unions, because, yeah, I think a lot of conservatives, and you're seeing increasingly conservatives be much more interested in wanting to have well-functioning labor unions. You know, when you think about what the options are, I think it's important to recognize, you know, if you don't have worker power, if you don't have workers able to advocate for themselves, you end up with much more inequality, and then you end up needing much more redistribution. And so I think conservatives would much prefer worker power that generates better outcomes in the market than needing government to come in and clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think you see the same thing in the workplace. You know, if you want workplaces to be operated in ways that are protective of workers, you need workers to have power in the workplace. The alternative is not just sort of employers treating everybody however they want. The alternative is a lot more government regulation. So I think we should absolutely prefer workers having the ability to sort of play a role in managing the workplace rather than needing government to do that. And then I think also in civil society, you know, obviously conservatives care a great deal about the social fabric, the strength of so-called mediating institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're often sort of stuck where you can say, you know, it'd be great if more people went to church, but there probably aren't a whole lot of policies that could or you would want to have determining whether people go to church. But the labor union worker organizations are an incredibly important part of the social fabric, and that's a place where policy makes a huge difference. So, you know, I think where the American labor movement really sort of went off the rails was more than anything in how politicized it has become. And what we note is that especially to the extent that unions are behaving as political organizations, that duty should attach to their politics as well. And if unions had to actually behave in politics in a way that represented workers, and, you know, union workers are not at all skewed toward the Democratic Party at this point,
mm-hmm.
then I think that could do a great deal of good. So those are the kinds of reforms that we're really interested in. Let's not just sort of cheer on the demise of labor or even try to hasten its demise. Let's recognize what it can do well and think about ways that can actually get it doing those things well again. I think that's really substantively important for the health of our economy. And frankly, I think it's very good politics for conservatives too.
On the topic of family, Oren, you write that an emphasis merely on advancing freedom will harm its own cause if it undermines the family in the process. And I think you also make the point that conservatives are very quick to identify when a policy from the left, a policy from liberals, might be harmful to the family, if there are consequences to government policy. So what perhaps can the hand of government do when it comes to family and strengthening family that even culture can't do?
Well, I think there are some direct tools and some more indirect ones. You know, I think a lot of the stuff we've just been talking about in indirect terms is really important to helping the family. You know, the market is not in many ways the family's friend. And this is something that, again, for a long time, conservatives, you know, going back centuries have noted that, you know, market forces, the push for efficiency and profit is very likely to erode a lot of the incentives, the institutions that are so necessary to healthy families. And then on the other side, you know, good jobs that allow people to support families are incredibly important to families forming in the first place. And I think, you know, there's been very good research showing that, you know, as we've especially allowed kind of the erosion of good blue collar jobs for especially younger men without college degrees, that connects then directly to decline in marriages, decline in stability in marriages that do happen, decline in stable environments for raising kids. So I think recognizing that the economic choices that we make and the constraints we put in markets and that some market outcomes are better than others is incredibly important to supporting the family. And then I think there are some things we need to do directly. I think, you know, we basically have just a kind of fact of life problem that in economic terms, in the modern world, raising a family has gotten a lot harder in a lot of ways. We ask people to essentially take on additional costs and reduce their earning potential simultaneously at a moment, you know, still very early in their lives when it's not something they can necessarily have saved for. And so I think in a sense, the way that conservatives should think about it is a lot the way that we think about Social Security. You know, the concept of social insurance, the concept of recognizing, you know, really important values and priorities that the market is not going to provide for, but that we collectively can choose to provide for, that is something government can do, where we can all contribute to supporting particularly important functions. And whether that's, you know, ensuring that our elderly in retirement are not in poverty, or ensuring that young people, you know, who are working or trying to support themselves but face that crunch, helping them to make ends meet. I think those are exactly the kinds of things conservatives should want government to do. And so, you know, we've proposed American Compass. It's in the book. This idea of a basically a family benefit. Mm-hmm. It's not a kind of blank check to everybody. But for families that are working, that are trying to support themselves, making sure that they're receiving essentially additional support from the public each year based on how many young kids they're raising. And then in effect, that's something they're going to pay back later in life as they pay taxes for the next generation raising families. I think that's the sort of thing that conservatives, again, not, you know, free market libertarian, absolutists aren't going to support that, but that's not conservatism. And I think that's exactly the sort of thing conservatives, should be figuring out.
Oren Kass, if I can ask one more question, going back in the book to the labor chapter, and there's so much discussion about this now in President Trump's second term. As I read through that essay, there's so much discussion about immigration policy when it comes to the American workforce. And I wonder, is that question of immigration policy, the question of work visas, is that the largest input variable into the workforce and how the American worker eventually is treated by employers and business?
I wouldn't say it's the largest one, but I think it's definitely a significant one. And I think it's significant both in the specific sense that, you know, if you add millions of new workers and many of them aren't even here legally and they're easily exploitable, and they are willing to take jobs in worse conditions at lower wages, that is quite obviously going to affect the opportunities that American workers are going to have. But I also think there's a broader sense in which, and Vice President Vance has spoken about this very well, the idea of sort of an addiction to cheap labor, that we have built a culture around our economy that says cheap labor is a good thing. I remember I was debating Steve Moore. I was a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, founder of the Club for Growth, and we were debating immigration and wages, and we really got to the nub of the issue where, I said, well, look, sure, if you keep wages down, you can get higher profits, and that's going to lead to a booming stock market, but that's not the right formula. And he said, cheap wages leads to a booming stock market. That benefits everyone. That really was the Republican Party position and the sort of Wall Street Journal position, for some it still is, that cheap labor leading to a booming stock market, leading to cheaper consumer stuff, that's what success looks like. And we shouldn't be surprised that if that is how people are thinking, if that's what we are promoting, we in fact end up with an economy that does not work for workers. And as a fact, does not support healthy families, communities, industry, or a healthy nation. And so I think changing that psychology, recognizing that actually good jobs that pay high wages, that's an output of the economy. That's one of the things we need our markets to do, can be very powerful in helping us think about, okay, therefore, what kinds of policies do we need if we want our markets to do that?
Warren Cass is chief economist at American Compass, AmericanCompass.org, also Commonplace.org. You can find him on X at Warren_Cass. And the book is The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. Warren, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Victor Davis Hanson and his commencement address at Hillsdale College this year in May of 2025. Also, Orrin Cass, editor of The New Conservatives, Restoring America's Commitment to Family, Community, and Industry. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
As we all get older, the one constant thing is the aggressive, excessive mail and advertising for Medicare, Medicare supplements, and Medicare Advantage. And almost every one of them is a call center with no idea of what you really need. Siskiyou Insurance has an agent that deals with nothing but Medicare issues and can explain the differences clearly between a Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage. Call Greg Green at Siskiyou Insurance at 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
It was on the streets of Pinar del Rio. You remember the smell of her hair. You thought, white gardenias. You shared dinner, then coffee. Then came that beautiful aroma of the cigar. You forgot her name, but not the cigar. La Roma de Cuba, mi amor. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
No pensé que fueras.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Plan your day with the Sue McClain News Hour on KCNR. Your weekday weather forecast equips you to tackle any weather, rain or shine. Sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, a local champion delivering premium flour, edibles, and concentrates with free delivery to Shasta Lake. Their Flower Fridays deal runs all weekend until stock's gone, so grab it fast. Support local by visiting X, Facebook, or thequeenofdragons.com. KCNR keeps you in the loop. Every day.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance.
People is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.